All right. Welcome. My name is Justin, and I'm an addict. And thanks to my God, the steps, and the fellowship of other addicts, I'm sober one day at a time since June 19th, 2015. And for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome to the RICO 12 speaker meeting. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust and sex, food and gambling, just to name a few. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year sobriety and who are actively working their recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time for 20 to 25 minutes. Then we, the live audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of that speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. Now, in order to ask questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. Now, if you're hearing this podcast recorded and would like to participate as a live audience member in the future, or even if you qualify and would like to be a future guest speaker, please go to www.rico12.com, that's R-E-C-O-1-2.com, to learn more and submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. RICO 12 is a self-supporting service, and we appreciate your help in keeping it that way. We gratefully accept contributions to help cover the costs of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. Those things add up, and we're grateful for any contributions you can make. To contribute, you can go to www.rico12.com/support, or you can click the link to PayPal in the chat of the live meeting. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 18. In last week's speaker meeting, we had the pleasure to hear from Heather. Now, Heather shared openly and honestly about her husband's addiction brought her to her own healing and a stronger relationship with God. If you missed hearing that one or any other meeting we have done, you can listen to them in podcast form by searching for RICO 12 speaker meeting podcast on virtually any podcast platform that you use. Or you can go to the RICO 12 website and find it under the link podcast. Now, recently, about the RICO 12 speaker meeting podcast, EHSLC said this on their review on Apple Podcasts. They said, "Great for any type of addict. Amazing content for anyone suffering with an addiction or helping someone that is. The speakers are people that have struggled with all kinds of addictions, such as alcohol, sex, drugs, and stealing. I have learned from all of their experiences, even though they might have struggled with addictions different than mine." Thank you, EHSLC. Now, if you, the listening audience, have also found value in this service, please take a moment to go to the podcast platform of your choosing and leave a rating and review. It helps us work our 12th step by carrying the message of recovery to more addicts who suffer. Now, let's introduce our guest speaker for today, Amy B. All right, Amy is a recovered food addict and Anon, who has been working recovery with varying degrees of success since April 2013. It took a major relapse to humble her to the point of complete honesty about her problem. Hitting bottom when she thought she knew all there was to know about recovery was baffling and confusing to her. God, however, waited patiently for her to run out of her own plans and designs and then led her to ARP, the addiction recovery program of her church, a fellowship which she said would never work for her. She's been happily working the steps of recovery every day since September 2018. Amy, we're happy to have you here. Take it away. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Justin. Really grateful to be here. My heart is pounding out of my chest, but hey, now I'm alive. I'm Amy, and I'm a recovering food addict. And like you said, I'm today to work my program, I need to be honest. And there's three things that I found I really need to be honest about. And that's first, my addiction and the nature of it, my honesty about God, and then about my honesty about relationships. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today. First of all, my addiction. In my addiction, as a food addict, there's no room for moderation. And there's never going to be a time that I can eat like other people because I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But first, I'll give you a little background on how this thing all started, maybe. Who knows? I may have been born this way. I don't know. I come from a loving alcoholic home with all that dynamic implies. One parent drank and the other controlled, and they did the best that they knew how to do. Growing up in my house, I received the message that I needed to look like I had everything together. Whether or not my parents overtly taught this, I really don't know, but that's what I heard. To maintain the appearance of control, when I felt so powerless and scared inside, I started to look for things outside myself to numb the bad feelings I was experiencing. From very young age, there was always something other about me. I didn't know what that was. I just knew that I was lacking something. I don't know. And I don't even think that I could have voiced that when I was young either. I just knew that I ate a lot of food. And when I did, it helped me feel a lot better. I didn't feel all that anxiety. My mom makes jokes about me in my toddler years that she'd buy me an outfit 1 week and I'd have grown out of it by the next week. So clearly I have always loved my food. One of my earliest memories of the food was stealing the baby food beet sticks my little brother was eating at his high chair. And my mom caught me and I justified my actions saying, well, he's not eating them, so I should eat it. From an early age, I also knew that the amount I was eating was not acceptable. And I started to look for ways to hide how much I was eating. And I'd try to get away with eating when my parents weren't paying attention. I remember having a pizza party with a bunch of kids at my house, and I was so excited to eat as much as I wanted without any limitations from my parents. They were going to be too preoccupied with the guests to tell me to slow down. By the time I was in junior high, I weighed more than I do now as an adult, as an almost 50-year-old woman, but I was about a foot shorter. The summer before ninth grade, I mustered all the self-will I had, and I started to diet. I probably followed some diet that I'd found in a teen magazine, but I honestly don't remember. All I remember that is by my 14th birthday, about 3 months later, I could fit into jeans that were a normal size for me. But by January of the next year, I started to have blackouts for seconds at a time when I was walking home from school. If restricting some food was good, not eating at all was even better. In PE class and walking home from school, if that was good exercise every day, then I could also add aerobics before school and maybe a session at my brother's weight bench in the evenings too. It just kind of built onto each other. And I also started to use the laxatives that I found in my mom's drawer of her bathroom. Through all this starving, I really did miss food, and I had these little periodic binges. And today I look back and I'm thankful for those binges because it probably kept me from damaging my body even further, because I would have been even thinner than I already was. My father took note of my weight loss. I had this daily ritual of I would go into my parents' bathroom and weigh myself, and he stopped me right in the middle of that ritual. And at the time, it felt so invasive because it was this little cocoon, this ritual that I would do all by myself. And he came and he confronted me about my weight and told me what he was seeing. And that didn't change anything for me. All it really did was make me be more secretive about what I was doing. But it was unsettling that someone noticed what I was doing. So I just started wearing baggier clothes, and I kind of gave some lip service to gaining some weight. But I felt thankful at the time that my parents were more distracted with other things. And so they didn't really follow up. And I don't know that it would have helped at the time either. Just because I wasn't eating, it didn't mean that I wasn't constantly reading cookbooks and spending all my money on food and thinking of ways that I could control food even further or just dominate my body. At some point, the binging took over again and I gained enough weight so that no one really said too much to me anymore. And I stopped blacking out, and some of the things that had happened to my body, like I had lost my period and everything, that came back. And so, it seemed that I was more or less normal on the outside again, but I was still extremely obsessed in my head, and I was always thinking about food, whether or not I was eating it. And I'd tasted that really powerful feeling of control when I was starving myself, and that remained an ideal that I could just never quite get back to. In my 20s, I kind of gave up on trying to control my food and my weight and just really started enjoying myself. I just surrendered to eating, and my weight shot up. I was just sick of fighting, and I just wanted to be numb all the time. And other things came into play as well, numbing things, namely prescription pills. And that became a competing issue. Life just felt really hard, and I still had that weird feeling that I didn't fit in. And I just wanted out. I just didn't want to play this game of life. Fast forward into my 30s, and I was married and I had kids. I continued to try and control my food and my weight, and I just thought that I needed to find the right diet, and all my problems were going to be solved. I still did struggle with pills too, and at one point I thought that might be my true problem. In 2008, I briefly attended the addiction recovery program of my church, but I didn't stay. I really didn't connect how trusting God was going to solve my issues with weight or pills. And I didn't really look like I had a weight problem at that point, so it was easy to hide. What's more, when I attended those meetings, they were talking about addiction and as someone or an addict who's lost the power of choice. And that just didn't sit well with me at the time. I just thought that addicts were selfish people who couldn't quit their bad habits, no matter who it hurt. I had a really negative view of the alcoholic in my life. I loved him a lot. It's my dad. But I couldn't reconcile that he just couldn't pull himself up by his bootstraps, basically. And so to go into this program where I might have to identify that way, I wasn't ready for that. So more and more restrictive dieting followed because the things that I had done previously weren't working anymore. I needed that hit from the food, but that meant more food, or if I was traveling the other way, it depended on which day the wind was blowing, more restriction. And I'd read more about nutrition because maybe I just didn't have the right combinations of foods, more binging, more controlling. I was getting really out of control. And what's more, speaking of control, I was trying to control everybody else's food, and people didn't want to talk to me because I was giving all kinds of unsolicited advice. Heaven forbid you start talking about what you were eating, because I would tell you that you were just flat out wrong to be eating that. And I was really annoying. So my family tells me. So I was also really into reading self-help books as well, because I thought I was going to be able to find some magic fix. And I remember checking out one book, and I do not recall the name of the book now, or even what kind of self-help she was going to tell me about. But what I do remember is at the beginning of the book, she started telling me her story and how she got into doing what she did. And for several pages, I was just turning and turning. I could relate to every bump in her journey. And finally, she turned the page, and I felt tricked when this happened, because she said, so if you can identify with any of what I just told you, you need to go to a 12-step group for a food addiction. What? I really felt tricked, but I also felt convicted. I knew that I had related to what she said, and I had to check it out. So I did. I was with my fourth baby was only about, how old was he? I guess he was about 4 months old. He was really young. And so when I went to this website of this 12-step group to look up what meetings they might have, the nearest meeting from me was about 50 miles away, because I live kind of in a remote area. At least I guess I did for these types of meetings at the time. And so, but they had a bunch of phone meetings. And so I started attending phone meetings a lot. And one day I heard a woman speaking who sounded like she had everything figured out. She was free, and I could hear it in her voice and how she shared. And the joy had returned to her life. And she actually had the audacity to say that she was recovered. So I called her and I asked her to be my sponsor, and she took me on, and she took me right to the doctor's opinion of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found out from that, that I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And I didn't know if I could believe this. Why was my body different? I mean, what, I have a true allergy. I have a dairy allergy, and I couldn't quite reconcile. So what does my eating have to do with my dairy allergy? And she explained to me, no, it's not quite like that. That when I ate something compulsively, it would light up my brain. And we were just kicking that obsession. And when she explained it to me that way, yes, I got it. When I eat compulsively, I don't know what's going to happen. It's like a game of Russian roulette. I might be able to control it, or I might be like I did once, with a whole sheet cake in front of two friends, just started gobbling it until I was done, apologizing the whole time because I couldn't stop. She took me through the steps, and I thought I was thorough at the time, but I also knew I was holding back things because I thought she wouldn't understand. I'd grown up going to church and I thought I knew all about God. Yet I couldn't reconcile some of my ideas about God, and I didn't want to tell my sponsor about any of the struggles I'd had with God and religion because I assumed that she'd either judge me or she wouldn't understand. And so I compartmentalized all those God hangups, and I continued to work the steps, and I called myself recovered, and I began sponsoring like she did. And life seemed good. But within 6 months, I was sponsor shopping because I thought for sure that the difficulties I was having with my problem were something with had to do something with my sponsor. If, you know, she wasn't so strict or abrasive, or, you know, I had a list of all her supposed offenses, and I just knew if I found a new sponsor that everything would be great. And so I did, I found a new sponsor. At least I did tell my old sponsor I was walking away. I did do that. I wasn't completely rotten. So I got this new sponsor, and she was really easygoing, and she kept seeing that I was having all these different fears. And finally she said, you know, you might want to go to this other support group for, people who have addicts in their lives. And, it was Al-Anon for family members, of alcoholics. Cause she said, maybe that can help you, cause you have all these, she didn't say you have weird fears, but she said you have quite a few. And so I did that, and I got a sponsor that was both recovered in the food addiction and also in Al-Anon, and we worked well together. And a few years down the road, I embraced the concept of alcoholic foods, even though I'd heard this idea before. I had never wanted to touch it because I didn't want to cut out certain foods. I knew I was still kind of getting an effect from certain things, and I didn't quite want to give that up. I still called myself recovered, and you know, it was nice to be in the fellowship and whatnot, but I had just hoped that if I worked the steps hard enough that my physical allergy would just disappear. And it's true that my obsession did lessen, and I learned a lot about not controlling others. But if I wasn't completely honest, I wasn't going to get complete recovery. And that's true. As I look back, I would have these periodic breakout binges that would just seem to come out of nowhere. And around 2015, I was out of control emotionally, and my food was really crazy. And my sponsor talked to me about some of these different foods that might be causing some of this behavior. And I reluctantly saw that sugar might be an alcoholic food for me. And we read the doctor's opinion again in the big book, and I could see that my abnormal reaction to sugar was an allergy of the body, that it wasn't just a when I would take a compulsive bite, that it was, I got more honest, and I could see that the thing I was reaching for most had sugar in it. And so living without sugar was a step in the right direction, and I continued to make more progress. But there was still another piece missing, and I continued to get an effect from my food and was still having some periodic binges. And emotionally, I wasn't very much in control either. And what's more, I was spending a lot of money just to make these elaborate copycat creations of foods I used to eat just without sugar. But I was using a lot of substitute sugars and still really engaging in the behaviors that I was before. But I was still giving service inside my group, and I could talk about the big book, and, you know, I was still back with that childhood idea of if I look good on the outside, all was good. But inside I was festering and I was obsessed. So I clung to service opportunities though, because I thought, well, you know, I'm going to get some recovery doing service. And it did keep some of the insanity in my head at bay, but I couldn't do it alone. And I know looking back that God did help me with the things that I was willing to hand over. But by this point, I wasn't handing over much. In fact, I'd kind of stopped working my food program and was just more working on the Al-Anon side of things. And I was really just trying to manage it all on my own. Again, I was becoming more and more attracted to self-help books, trying to look for an answer. And I became very attracted to books that promise recovery without God in the steps. And these books talked about how I could retrain my brain and how through sheer willpower, I could overcome my addiction. And did I even really need to call myself an addict anymore if I could retrain my brain? Why was I so comfortable with the idea that God had no power or that God didn't exist? It seemed inconsistent with my professed belief, and yet I was really drawn to that idea. I've heard that said that water rises to its own level, and clearly it said something about me that I was attracted to these ideas. I mean, these must have been my true beliefs, that God wasn't all that powerful and that God could only be trusted with certain situations. But I wasn't yet willing to look at my lack of trust in my higher power. So by 2017, I was just done trying to pretend anymore. And I called my sponsor and I said, my words were, I just can't do this anymore. The 12 steps, everything. I thanked her for her years of service. At this point, we'd been working together for a long time and she was great. She'd helped me a lot. And at first, it felt so freeing because I no longer had to 10th step or do evening reviews. Freed up a lot of time. And I allowed myself to eat sugar and that felt amazing. I thought I was cured because for the first week, I could completely handle having a few goodies here and there. And I congratulated myself that I didn't go crazy and binge. And I was even eating less than other people. 2 cookies per serving? Yeah, that's not a problem. I was totally satisfied for about a week. I wasn't binging and I felt more calm than I had in years. I was telling myself a story. But at the time, I thought it was a true story. I could just be normal again, like everyone else. I could have a treat with a family. I felt high-spirited, probably even giddy. Finally free, that's what I thought. How could I have ever lived that in that restrictive way that I had for the last year, couple of years? Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew I was justified because I'd been questioning whether all this stuff I'd been doing for years was sustainable, and clearly not, because now I was free and I could be normal. But what I didn't notice is how quickly I started making rules for all the goodies and sneaking in bites here and there when no one was looking. It was on a much smaller scale at first, and so it didn't set off any alarm bells. And I was kind of working on retraining my brain with a program I'd purchased, and I was having limited success. But I did notice that there was some chatter in my head now and again, now when I was taking bites of things. And it was taking more and more willpower to not continue eating on after I'd taken bites of certain things. Let's fast forward a whole year, and I'd gained a noticeable amount of weight despite my usual amount of exercise, and I was depressed to the point that thoughts of suicide were creeping in. That scared me a lot because back in my 20s, I'd gone down that road, but now I had a family, and so the thoughts of suicide were really scary, and I knew something had to change. Life was really hard, and I felt defeated. I wallowed in self-pity and was really quick to anger. I started to feel like I've done this to myself. I opened up Pandora's box again, and now I'm in deeper than I was before. And what can I do? Because I didn't have the willingness to change. Part of me still really wanted to eat. I still wanted that effect. It was an instant fix to all that anger every day. I felt ashamed. I kept telling myself, I knew better. I knew better. Why did I ever walk away? I was at a point where I couldn't live with the food and I couldn't live without it. Food really was my master at this point. On top of it, I was mad at God. Why had he even made me this way? This wasn't fair. Everybody else gets to eat what they want to. Everybody else, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a victim story I was telling myself. These thoughts weren't conscious, but they were definitely in the back of my mind. And I was so ticked off. Ticked off at God, but I knew he was my only hope too. So I reluctantly started to pray for willingness. And it took some months, but slowly my willingness grew. And at first I was led to a book written by a neuroscientist, and she was talking about the science of addiction, specifically food addiction. And that cleared away for me any delusions I harbored about my addiction being real. And it also showed me that I was so stubborn that I needed scientific proof that addiction was real. But her book also addressed an issue that I had said I would never touch, and that was volume. But I also knew my addiction had progressed. And as I prayed for willingness, I started to see that now to be able to deal with addiction, I was also going to have to weigh my food. And I said I would never, ever do this because only crazies did that. Well, never say never. God has a sense of humor. I was also given some very specific instructions from God. It was to Google ARP podcast. Like I said earlier, I'd attended ARP before and I thought it wasn't for me. And I especially thought I wasn't going to attend because I thought it was just watered down AA. And I thought I knew better. but I followed the prompting and I found a podcast, and it was hosted by two guys who attended ARP. And in listening to them, I was convinced that I really did need to attend a meeting. And so in June 2018, I walked into my first meeting and I felt really scared and I felt better than everyone else because I don't know why. how can you feel both ways at once? But I did. Hugely self-conscious because I had never actually attended a face-to-face meeting before. All my years in recovery had been over the phone. Well, I also had a few hangups that ARP is also a general addiction to meeting, and I didn't know if I could relate to people with other addictions. It turned out, though, I really, really could. Addiction's addiction. And I found in ARP that we were all offered the same solution no matter what our addiction, and that's a loving God who's powerful enough to handle any problem. So today, to be honest about my addiction, when I hear people talk about moderation and diets, I know that's not for me. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about three types of drinkers. And I substitute drinker with eater. There's a moderate eater, a hard eater, and a real eater. The moderate eater can just push away food when they're full, and I don't understand that. That's not me. The hard eater can stop eating the way they do, given sufficient reason, like if they are told they're going to die of a heart attack if they don't. And then there's the real deal. That's me, who anything, you could tell me anything is going to happen to me. I wouldn't care. I would still eat. I know that's me. And because that's me, I need a spiritual solution. And so today I need God's help, and I need to stay away from my alcoholic foods, and I have to weigh and measure my food at home. I do allow myself to limit myself to one plate of food when I'm out in a restaurant. But that's what I do today to be free. Do I have any more time, or do I need to stop?
Let's wrap it up in the next 2 minutes.
Okay. I guess I want to talk really quick about God. And I just want to say that when I went to ARP, I was able to address my issues with my higher power. And I saw that I had to deal with that. I had erroneously believed all my life that God was just going to punish me, and that I had to have a whole list of, I had to believe the right way in God for God to help me. That there was this whole, and I needed validation that what I was believing was right. But I just needed to believe that there was a God powerful enough. I don't know exactly what else to say about that. Finally, and I also needed to be honest in my relationships. And that included the addicts in my life. Really quickly, I'll say that it's painful to see the addicts in my life, or they don't identify as addicts, but I, like with family members who may be addicts, like one of my children seems to have behaviors around food that I've had, and there's issues of control around that. And today I need to turn those over to God. That's a struggle of mine, control as well. I need to remember that didn't help me when my parents would confront me with how I was eating. And today I can do what I can to have healthy food in the house, but I need to, my son has a God, and if he decides that he's an addict, I know that God is there. And the best thing I can do for him and some other addicts in my life is to, like a lot of other people say, recover, recover, recover. I can work my program today. And when I have selfishness and fear and dishonesty and resentment crop up, I can immediately turn those over to God. Today, working recovery isn't about being perfect. It's about me recognizing that I do have feelings, and that's okay. And God is big enough to handle them. And so as long as I stay in fit spiritual condition, which is working my program every day, I can be free. It doesn't mean that I'm going to arrive at some magical island where I have no worries and no character defects. I'm far from perfect, but honesty in my program means that I have to admit that I'm still very much human, and fit spiritual condition means that I have to stay humble enough every day to honestly admit that I need God, and I need God many, many times a day. And I'm grateful today to be an addict because it really got my attention. And it allows me to connect with God every day and be of service. And I pass.
Thank you so much, Amy. That I love the honesty and vulnerability in your experience there. It just confirms to me that much more that all addictions have a very, very similar core and root. Now, before we get to the questions and answers, and once again, I would like to remind the live audience to, if you have questions, comments, anything, type them into the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window, and we'll get those questions asked and answered here. But before we get to that, would you mind sharing for another 60 seconds a little bit about the fellowship, the ARP, and how that fellowship helps you and may help somebody else who's looking for some support?
Sure. I love ARP. It is actually the Addiction Recovery Program. It is through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And like I said, it is a general addiction meeting, so anyone is welcome to attend, both addict and friends and family of addicts. And we work the 12 steps and based from off of the 12 steps found in the big books, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they have phone meetings, in-person meetings, and I have found the meetings to be very supportive and very helpful, especially when you work the steps with a sponsor.
Very good. Thank you, Amy. Appreciate that. All right. So I've got a couple of questions here, and then we'll mix in questions that come in from the audience. You know, you mentioned when you first approached someone to be your sponsor that you, and you weren't in person, so you didn't see it, but you heard it in their voice. You heard the light in their voice. Can you please describe to us a little bit more about what that means? How do you know when somebody that you, you know, that you might be able to rely, not rely on, but go to for help, has that light?
That's a good question. Also, like, I need to think about that a little bit. The lack of worry, actually, is what I noticed in her. The lack of caring what other people thought about her, she cared more about what her higher power thought. She was very willing to admit when she was wrong and very willing to be upfront about what her problem was and what the solution was. That makes sense.
Yeah, that does. It makes sense to me. Hopefully it makes sense to others too, because it seems clear. I love that concept. And it's kind of a new awakening in my own recovery of you'd mentioned the lack of worry. If I go into my day in a defensive stance, like I'm scared about what things are going to come at me, whatever my addiction is, what's going to hit me today. And I worry about that. I'm living in what I call abstinence. Well, what is in my definition, abstinence and sobriety. And that's miserable. I need to live in recovery and healing. And to me, there's a difference in that, the worry and the trust in God going into the day, trusting that he will protect me. And then you mentioned also something else here, Amy, that I really identified with. You said, you know, you had grown up in a faith tradition, knowing everything about God. How has that perception changed in your own life since that? And how did that shift happen?
Ooh. I felt like I used to have a list of God is this and God is that. And if I couldn't reconcile an experience with that list, it must not be God. Well, that list was made up by me. And I sure don't know that everything there is to know about God. Heaven forbid, because I can't see the forest for the trees half the time. Heaven forbid that I limit God to what I thought I knew about him. How did I reconcile that? From working the program and starting to know that, no, I don't know everything, opened me up to the idea that maybe some of my ideas about God that I thought I knew were either very limiting or flat out false. And that gave me room to see that, oh, maybe God is more powerful. Maybe he can do a lot more in my life and other people's lives than I thought previously.
Oh, very cool. Is there a specific maybe belief that you used to have that was limiting or flat out untrue that now as you look at it, you go, huh, I see much more clearly now in that. Can you think of anything specific?
The one that really stands out to me, well, two things. One, God wasn't going to be able to help me with my addiction because everyone has to eat every day. And, you know, I was just a glutton and lacked willpower. Why would he help me with that? So that was one. But I also very much believed in the idea, I guess it comes from the Old Testament, the eye for an eye. You know, whatever I did or someone else did, there was going to be a punishment to it that was, it better be very severe, because remember, these were my own ideas about God. And so God could only give very severe punishments. I lost the rest of the question that you asked me.
No, I think that covers it, because I don't remember anything else from it either. So very good. All right. And another thing that you said, water rises to its own level. I've never heard that spoken quite like that. And it probably because I'm very sheltered and have never heard that. But can you kind of expound on that just a little bit? Water rises to its own level, and what that means in the context of addiction and recovery.
Well, the way I understand it, and I've never looked it up, is just like attracts like, I guess. And so when I was ready for a certain amount of truth, that's what I found. But when I was hiding and not willing to be honest, there was no way I was going to rise to anything above where I was at. I equate that saying to the other saying, I love my sayings, that, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. So for me, they're very similar. And I wasn't going to be able to rise to any level of recovery until my level of willingness was ready to meet the honesty required to get to that level of recovery.
Awesome. Thank you. We got a question that came in from Heather. She says, "Hi, Amy. Thank you for your share. What would you say to someone who says God isn't there or isn't helping me in my recovery?"
Oh, hey, Heather. That's a great question. To them, I would say, I'd ask them to, probably perform an experiment and write down when they thought they might be noticing God and when they weren't. That doesn't really explain it. That's a toughie. I would ask them to perform a little experiment, I guess, and see if they can believe in God. Start to maybe try on the idea of if they notice something in their day that they can't explain, whether that could be God or not. And if that's what I would say, that sounds like that one baffles me a little bit too. But also, if they can't believe in God at all, if there's anything greater than themselves. For me, when I first started out, even though I said I believed in God, when I worked with my first sponsor, I had to ask her to be my higher power, essentially. In fact, I did say, "Can you be my higher power right now? Because I don't know if there's anything greater right now." And so I trusted her and I followed her directions. And that's how I started. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And I know that we're having a little bit of audio difficulties right now, but I'm really grateful for that share. I think we may have lost Amy, but so grateful to you, Amy, and for the willingness to share. Next week, we'll have a special opportunity to hear from a mother and son combination who are going to be speaking to us about addiction being a family affair. Patricia is the mother, and she is a member of Al-Anon, as well as CODA, Codependents Anonymous, and her son, Sid, who is a member of Crystal Meth Anonymous, CMA. I'm really excited to hear this team speak to us and give us a little bit more about addiction being a family affair. Amy has asked that we do the third step prayer to launch us off on our day. So I will go ahead and do that, and we will kick off on our day, thanking Amy once again for her willingness to share her experience, strength, and hope. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Thanks again, Amy. Keep working it. It works when I work it, so work it. You are worth it. Have a great week.
this life of mine. Peaks too high to conquer, streams too wide to cross, troughs too deep to walk through without incurring loss. Yet here I am, still standing tall, despite the rough terrain. One like me survive the storms and walk through wind and rain. Still standing, I will fight the good fight. Still searching for glimmers of light. Feet still on the ground, I can still be found standing still.
Bind it with the seal.